Thank you very much. So I want to kind of, in some sense, continue to talk from yesterday. So yesterday we saw that if you have a Shimura datum and you have a hyperspecial level structure, then you should expect the Shimura variety to have a nice integral model. So if you take a prime of the reflex field dividing P, then there should be a nice model which is equivariant, and for the action of the of the action of the points of G with the adels with the trivial P component. And we saw that in many cases one could actually construct this model. And now in the talk today I want to explain what one could expect from the structure of the mod P points of this thing. So sorry, that should be a curly S. Of course, it's the integral model. This mod p points you take. Okay. So, what kind of questions one might ask? so, a kind of classical-looking question is you might ask for some kind of analog of Hondor-Tate theory in the situation of the Shimura varieties. Namely, I mean, so in Hondor-Tate theory, you classify a billion varieties over a finite field after isogeny. And in this case, if you imagine, say, your Shimura variety is a Hodge type, so it's it carries some family of abelian varieties with extra structure, then you might ask the analogous thing, that there's a notion of isogeny class on this mod P, on this integral model, on the mod P fiber of the integral model, or at least on the mod P points, and you might ask that whether every isogeny class can be lifted to a CM point, or what's called a special point on the Shimura variety. So that's one question. Another question is, maybe you want to count the mod P points. So we saw, I think, in a couple of talks that there's a kind of general strategy due to Langlands to, if you have a good expression for the mod P points, then you can apply the Lefschetz trace formula to kind of compute the zeta function, the local term for the zeta function at the prime lambda for this guy. And then maybe you want to compare it with some what comes out of the Selberg trace formula. Okay. So in fact, what we're going to see, I mean, the main point of the conjecture I want to explain and the results is kind of this second question. But we'll actually see that these two questions are kind of intimately related. So in solving the second question, one in practice has to kind of solve the first question. Okay. So let me kind of give a overview of the structure about of the mod p points. So this is what's called the Langlands-Rapoport conjecture. And so, okay, so this conjecture right now, as it stands there, I mean, it's described. So on the right hand side, I have the mod p points with its action of the adels away from p, and I have the action of the Frobenius. I have the action of Frobenius on the right hand side. On the left-hand side, there's something, of course, which I haven't yet defined. But rather than just giving the definition, I kind of want to approximate the definition rather than just kind of overwhelming you with the formalism. So I'm going to kind of explain to you first the structure of what the left-hand side is, and then eventually give you some feel for the conjecture. So I haven't defined the left-hand side, but even if you know nothing, you see just from the symbols that it's some kind of disjoint union over sets over an indexing set. Okay, so that's very basic structure. So if you know nothing more than that, and you know this conjecture, then you can ask, well, what does that structure correspond to on the right-hand side, right? And what it should correspond to is that the phis are meant to parameterize the isogeny classes on the right-hand side under this isomorphism, and the SVs parameterize points in a given isogeny class. Okay, and of course the point is that we're going to make the left-hand side more explicit than merely saying that. So I have to do two things for you. I have to tell you what kind of object the phi is, and then I have to give you kind of a formula for the SV. Okay. So I'm not going to actually explain precisely what the phis are, because there's a kind of formalism. So the precise definition of the phi, there's a groupoid you can make, which is the at least in some kind of moral sense, a fundamental groupoid of the category of motors over FP bar. Right? So that category, I mean, if you have a motive over FP bar, you can look at its lattice cohomology for L different from P, or you can look at its crystalline cohomology. That gives you different realizations, but there's no cube fiber functor, so you don't get a Sanakian group, you only get a Sanakian groupoid. And then, well, if you're looking at motives, some kind of motives up to isogeny, which is what you would imagine these should parameterize. Remember, the points here parameterize things in a given isogeny class. Then it's natural to expect that these phis are parameterized by some kind of representations of the groupoid, right? If this was really a neutral Sanakian category, you would have representations of the corresponding group. And, well, it should satisfy certain conditions, okay? But instead of telling you what the phis are and what the conditions are, I'm going to instead tell you some invariants that you can attach to the phis, at least in the case of Hodge type. Okay, so maybe I'll come back to the phis a little bit at the end. So the rough idea is that if I have an abelian variety after isogeny, so suppose we're in the case of Hodge type, then if I have an isogeny class, I have an abelian variety after isogeny. And I can attach to such a thing for every L, the conjugacy class of Frobenius acting on the elliptic tape module or elliptic cohomology. And that ends up being, some data. So here I have these gamma L's. Now, you know when you attach the conjugacy class of Frobenius, I mean, if you just think of it as an element in the, say, general linear group, that the characteristic polynomial of Frobenius doesn't depend on L. Okay? So the analog of this in this case is that there's a stronger statement, namely that the conjugacy class of this gamma L doesn't depend as an element of G doesn't depend on L. And the way that's expressed, so we saw these kind of triples come up in Peter Schultz's talk, is that there's some gamma naught, oops, that should be in G of Q bar, there should be no L there. There's some gamma naught in G of Q bar, gamma naught is in G of Q, it's up here, but down here there's a kind of... it makes sense, I'm misreading my own slides, sorry. Very unusually, the slides are correct, but the speaker is speaking rubbish. Okay, so the way that you express that these guys are conjugate is that you give yourself a gamma naught in G of Q, and you ask that in G of Q L bar, that gamma naught is conjugate to this gamma L here. But it's really, it's a weaker notion. I mean, it's really weaker than being conjugate. It's only conjugate in the algebraic closure. Okay. So, and similarly, if you think about crystalline cohomology, well, then you have the Frobenius, which is given by, it's a semilinear thing, and then if I take its norm, I get kind of the absolute Frobenius, sorry, not the relative Frobenius, and this should again be stably conjugate to gamma naught. So this is just, again, this independence, this generalization of the fact that the characteristic polynomial of Frobenius is independent of L, even if L is P, and you use crystalline cohomology. Sorry? Yes, it should be in the fraction field. Sorry. Yeah, that's a typo here. Thank you. Sorry? That's not unusual that you have a typo? So this data is required to satisfy certain conditions. These correspond to the conditions on the phis. And now, with this data, I mean, with this data of the triple, I can tell you what the SV looks like. So remember, the SV is meant to parameterize points in fixed isogeny class. And it has the structure. So there's something corresponding to the prime P. Then there's this part. So this part is responsible for the prime to P isogenies. This part is responsible for the P isogenies. But then I have to divide out by something, right? Because, I mean, if I have an abelian variety, I can change it in this isogeny class. I can change it by a P isogeny or prime to P isogeny. But if there's an automorphism of the abelian variety, I have to divide out by that automorphism if I have a moduli space. So that's what the I of Q is responsible for. And Well, so we'll need this a little later. So if because this is one of the extra structures here as a polarization, this group, this algebraic group of automorphisms of the abelian variety is automatically compact mod center at infinity. It's a form of the centralizer of this element of gamma naught, right? So that's kind of the structure. Okay, so there's the structure. And now I have to tell you, I mean, I can be, so that's the structure, but now I have to be even more explicit. I should tell you what this XPFB looks like. Okay, so the idea is that, I mean, it's meant to correspond to, right, I told you the XPFB is responsible for the PI isogenies. Now, if I have one abelian variety and I want to change it by, I want to replace it by kind of one which is PI isogenous, what can I do? Well, I can take the Duden A module of the abelian variety, and I can kind of tensor it by QP, and then if I have an isogenous abelian variety, that corresponds to some other lattice in the Duden A module, okay? But we know, because of the axioms of the Duden A module, it can't be an arbitrary lattice. It has to, the Frobenius has to satisfy some condition. So this is what this condition here is kind of responsible for. It's the G-valued version. So it says that if I change my abelian variety by changing the Duden A lattice by some element G in my group, so L is the, well, you see here, so I change it by some element G, then the new Frobenius should be in a certain part of the Cartan decomposition. It's the part given by this co-character mu. So mu is the co-character of GCP, which is conjugate to the character mu H. Remember, H was the co-character in the Shimura datum. So that's how you should think of this condition. Okay, condition on the Duden A module. Okay, so now you have the structure. And you can also write down the action of Frobenius. I guess that's the last thing. So I said that you should have a bijection. On the right-hand side, you have the action of the G of the adels with trivial P components. So you see there's an obvious action of that here. And it should be compatible with Frobenius. And the action of Frobenius is just given by the following formula. I mean, so, the Frobenius is given by B sigma. So it's just, you get the following formula. So, and you can see that, I mean, it's a little one-line exercise to check that if mu, the conjugacy class of mu, is fixed by this power of the Frobenius, so this is going to be the relative one, then if you have an element G in here, if you apply this operation, the new element is again inside XP of P. Okay, so you get an action of Frobenius. All right. So there's the conjecture. So I've now explained the left-hand side. Right? I explained the left-hand side, except I cheated a little bit with this phi. So I told you that in the Hodge case, the phi you can attach this Kottwitz triple, and then the Kottwitz triple actually determines S phi. So what kind of thing is implicit in this conjecture? I mean, if you try to kind of understand what kind of mathematics you might want to do to prove it. So one thing is that implicit in this conjecture is some generalization of Tate's conjecture on the fact that on endomorphisms of abelian varieties over finite fields, right? So if you take endomorphism of the abelian variety, tensor QL, is the same as, so the Tate conjecture for abelian varieties over a finite field. And the reason for that is, what are we trying to do? So on the right-hand side, we have some moduli space for abelian varieties with extra structure, right? But on the left-hand side, we're trying to classify at first the isogeny classes of these. How are we classifying them? Well, I told you that they're classified by roughly giving the conjugacy class of Frobenius, right? So in particular, if you have two abelian varieties where the conjugacy class of Frobenius is the same, then roughly speaking, they should be in the same isogeny class over here, okay? I say roughly because there's a difference between phi and this triple, but it's kind of a finite difference. So if you think about what kind of statement that is, that's exactly the fact, that's exactly kind of Tait's conjecture for a finite field, right? That you have 2 billion varieties where the characters to polynomial Frobenius is the same, then they're isogenous. So there's some generalization like that. And in fact, it turns out that this is also related to the state, to the kind of first problem I considered about lifting isogeny classes to finding a point in the isogeny class which has a CM lifting, because in fact one of the main results in the original paper of Langlois Rapport is that is that if you look at the isogeny classes which appear here, then they can all be produced in a certain way from a kind of CM situation. So if you believe that, then if you're hoping to prove this, then you really have to address this question of CM liftings. Right, so you end up proving kind of this statement first. Yeah, I always get that question. This is the first one, right? And the second conjecture is the fact that every isogeny class contains a point which has a special lifting. First implies second, yeah. Okay. So in the PL case, this is due to Kotwitz and Zink, and there's a kind of subtlety which appears in what I'm doing as well, which is that Kotwitz implicitly constructs such a bijection. I mean, it's easy to, I think, deduce such a bijection from what he's doing, but it's not quite canonical. Okay. Basically, you group the isogeny classes on each side into kind of finite sets, and then you can match up these sets, and you show the elements in each set have the same cardinality. I mean, the elements in matching sets have the same cardinality. So, of course, for applications, this doesn't matter, because, for example, if you want to just count Monte points, as long as you have such a bijection compatible with all the structures, then you can just use it. Okay. Heuristically, you would like, if you believe in the kind of the philosophy of motives, then if you have an abelian variety, you really should have a motive, so you really should have a particular phi from P into G. So. Okay. So now let me explain a theorem. So suppose you have P is bigger than 2, GX is of abelian type, so remember that those are these quotients of Hodge type, and KP is hyperspecial, then this conjecture holds, provided G is split at P. So this condition that G is split at P should be unnecessary. There's one calculation which is not completely finished, but which becomes much easier in this case, so it's finished. I'll indicate it's used just at one place later. And so in particular, and well, moreover, in this case, it's also true that in every isogeny class, there's a point which has a special lifting. All right. So what I want to do is kind of first indicate what are the difficulties that you have to overcome compared to the PEL case, and then I'll try to explain kind of some ideas for overcoming those. So the first problem, which you absolutely don't have in the PEL case, is the following. So suppose you have a point on your Shimura variety, right? And you're trying to show just the isogeny class of that point has the structure that you expect. Okay, so let's take our G in this set, which is meant to parameterize the points in the isogeny class. And so I can take my Dudenay module for my abelian variety, and I can multiply it by this G, so I get a new lattice, and that corresponds to some other abelian variety, which I'll call GX. So the original one was called AX. Okay. So now remember, in the case of Hodge type, how was this model constructed? It was constructed by kind of taking the closure and then a normalization in the moduli space of polarized abelian varieties. So it's not at all clear that this new point, G sub X, this new abelian variety actually corresponds to a point which is still on this Shimura variety. I mean, if you think of this to kind of a first approximation as embedded in the moduli space of abelian varieties, now you have a new polarized abelian variety, but you don't have any moduli theoretic interpretation, right? In the PEL case, you have a moduli theoretic interpretation. You can just easily check that this new abelian variety has the required structures, okay? But here you're constructing everything kind of by reduction of points mod zero because you're taking the closure. So it's not at all clear even that there's a map like this which would send G on underlying abelian varieties, which send G to kind of this new abelian variety. So you have to overcome that problem. The second thing is that, well, if I have an X, I have my abelian variety AX, I can certainly attach to it these Frobenius elements and the crystalline Frobenius. But it's not at all clear that these gamma L's are stably conjugate. Okay, so let me go back. So what happens in the PEL case? One is kind of lucky in that case. The symplectic representation you're looking at always somehow corresponds to a classical group in the standard representation. And there's a little miracle that occurs that if two things have the same characteristic polynomial, then they're stably conjugate. But in this generality, you certainly don't have that, so you don't know that these gamma L's are stably conjugate. And then, even if you have, suppose that you have a map like this, so you somehow overcame the first problem, then you want, remember the isogeny class is meant to be this guy modulo the Q points of this group I. And this group I is meant to be a compact form of the centralizer of gamma naught and G. In particular, it should be some group which has the same rank as the group G. But it's not clear that it's not clear that this, let me say this, it's not clear that if you take this abelian variety equipped with these extra Hodge cycles that I discussed last time, that if you look at the automorphisms of this, that this is big enough. Yeah, the compactness is clear because, I mean, whatever this group is, maybe it's trivial, right? But whatever it is, it's obviously contained in the same group when you just take polarized abelian varieties, right? So the bigger one is compact. And so in fact, it's compact mod center, but it's even stronger than that. It's compact just modulo kind of scalars. Yeah, so the compactness is not a problem, but to show this group is as big as you need is a problem. Okay, so you have these three difficulties. In the PL case, it's just you can deduce this from Tate's theorem, which tells you something about automorphisms of the abelian variety. So here are some ideas for solving these problems. So let me try to explain how you overcome the first problem, right? So the first problem was that if I take a point, I'm trying to show that if I translate the Dudenay lattice by an element in the set XPC, that I again get a point on my Shimura variety. Okay? So, well, one thing I can do, which is kind of obvious, but doesn't look, I mean, by itself is not at all enough, if I take a lifting of this point, and I have now an abelian variety in characteristic zero, and I use an isogeny in characteristic zero, which stays in my Shimura variety, then I can reduce the new point, the new isogenous point in characteristic zero, and I will get a new point in characteristic P. Okay? So, right, so if I take a lifting, I can certainly look at all the P isogenies that I get in characteristic zero.
But you
want
to know what you get for level case of P.
I have to think if this is multiplication on the left or the right. I mean, the reason that, yes, so I think what you're basically saying is if you think of this as double quotient, then there's no obvious action of, let me say this. If you think of it, let me rephrase your question. If you think of this as a double quotient, then you might object that if I take a point, there's no obvious action of G of QP, right? But what you can do is you can take, if I don't divide by the Q points of the group, right, I can just take a representative, right, and then I just multiply G of QP. So the reason you have to fudge that is because there are various, the group G is appearing here in various ways. It's kind of realized as a subgroup in GL of various cohomologies, and to kind of really identify the group that's appearing here with GFQP, you have to make a choice, which your mouse is kind of choosing that wisdom. But the answer to your question is, in some sense, this is kind of multiplication on the left, not on the right. I don't care about that right now. This is just a point in characteristic zero. I mean, all I'm saying is if you have a point in characteristic zero, I can make isogenies in characteristic zero. This is kind of a trivial statement, which looks, I mean, but there are many more isogenies in characteristic P, but certainly I can do this, right? I mean, I can just lift to characteristic zero, and then I can at least, I mean, so then I get a map like this, which comes from reduction of isogenies from characteristic zero to characteristic P. And so then at least on the image of this map, G goes to G naught, I can define this guy just by sending an element, if I have an element here which is a thought of G naught, I can just send it to the reduction of this element at this new point. Okay? So that looks completely, I mean, certainly not all points over that form. But now one can do the following thing. So first of all, this isogeny classes in characteristic P, they're not just a naked set, they have some kind of geometric structure. And so, this map here, which appears here, certainly can't be surjective, but what one can try to show is at least that it's surjective on the connected components of the set. So because it has a geometric structure, you can make sense of connected components, and then you can show that this map is actually surjective. So this is actually the one step in which the proof is not quite finished, except when G is split. So that's joint work with Chen and Feynman. And the idea is you kind of give a, in some sense, a pretty concrete description of the set of connected components, and then once you have that, it's not hard to check that at least this is surjective. Okay? So we have these isogenies in characteristic zero, we can reduce them. We, of course, don't get all isogenies in characteristic P, but at least we kind of hit every connected component of the reduction. But now it turns out we're in better shape, because what happens is, if you're on a connected component, right, so now we've hit every connected component, but I have to show that if I'm on a connected component, I can extend the map to the, if I have it at one point, I can extend it everywhere, right? Now remember, if I think of myself as being inside the moduli space of polarized abelian varieties, then this certainly admits the map from XP. I want to check that I stay inside this, oops, where am I? I want to check that I stay inside this Shimura subvariety, okay? But on connected components, that becomes a local calculation, a kind of at the point, right? I mean, if my connected component stays inside in the formal neighborhood of the point, then it stays inside on the whole irreducible component, and I can move along the irreducible component. And that's so in other words, since it's a local calculation, you can use deformation theory, and the one thing you do have from the proof which comes out of the proof of the smoothness, you do have a good deformation theoretic description of formal neighborhoods of this guy. Okay, so you're able to kind of rescue the situation. Okay, so that's that. So now I want to skip over to the problem two, which was the thing with the conjugacy classes, and go to problem three, which is showing that the group I is big enough. Okay, so remember I said that, in the PL case, you can show I is big enough using Tate's theorem. In this case, you can't use Tate's theorem directly, but it turns out that there's a reformulation of the proofs of Tate's theorem, which works when you have abelian varieties equipped with kind of these reductions of Hodge cycles. And so what I want to explain is just that variant of that proof. So I'm going to do it in the original situation of polarized abelian varieties, just so it's a little more familiar. But then it just works when you add Hodge cycles. There's almost no change. Okay, so actually this is kind of pretty simple. That's why I can do it. So suppose that I have a principally polarized abelian variety over a finite field. And so what are we going to do? So I take a prime L different from P, and I can look at the automorphisms of the H1, right, which compatible with polarization commute with Frobenius. And then I can do the same thing for the abelian variety. I can look at its automorphisms, which are compatible with the polarization. So when I write automorphisms here, I always mean automorphisms of the abelian variety in, as a kind of up to Q isogeny. Okay. And so what we're trying to prove is just that if I extend scalars from one from this kind of smaller group, I get the other one. Obviously, if I have, I mean, obviously I have a map from the left to the right. If I have an automorphism, I get an automorphism of this guy up here. Okay, so let's do that. So in this case, you have independence of L. So you can it's enough to prove it for any L different from P. We're going to choose an L later. So I just choose some level structure at L. And then I consider these So then I can consider just abelian varieties which are L isogenous to my original one. Okay, so these are parameterized by this quotient on the right, and the quotient on the left we'll come back to. Now, if I look at this quotient on the right, okay, well, the L isogenous abelian varieties, they're parameterized by some points on a quasi-projective variety, namely my moduli space of principally polarized abelian varieties. But if I take this whole quotient on the right, then there's no reason that all those points should be defined over the same field, which is here FQ, I'm calling FQ, right? Because, I mean, if I take an element here in GSP, it's the same argument that we saw in the Piatic case. So I take my abelian variety, and I kind of look in the rational tape module, and I replace the tape module with a different lattice. Okay, I multiply the lattice by an element of GSP. But there's no reason that new lattice should be stable under Frobenius. So there's no reason that the abelian variety would be defined over the same field. Okay. So in general, these correspond to all these points, but they're defined over all different fields. But now let's look at this quotient on the right. So on the right, I've basically replaced GSP by this group IL. So this consisted exactly in automorphisms which did commute with Frobenius. So if I take a point on the left, then my new abelian variety will be defined over the same finite field because the lattice will be stable by Frobenius. So that tells me that this quotient on the left is actually finite. Okay. So that's kind of the first geometric finiteness property used by Tate. So again, tracking the ingredients of his proof. In particular, if I look at the quotient of IL by IQL, so here I have this quotient, so this was finite, but here I just have a compact group, so I can certainly delete it and replace this by its QL points, and so certainly this quotient is compact. And now I'm going to choose L so that the group IL is a split group. So for that, I use the compatible system. So if you look at Tate's proof, he also makes this choice. And then we have the following lemma. So if I have a connected reductive group over QL, which is split, and then I have a closed subgroup, so that the quotient is compact, then the smaller group, I, contains a Borel subgroup of I prime. And why can we finish with that? Now we apply this lemma to this quotient, IL modulo the group I over QL. So this tells me that IQL contains a Borel subgroup of this guy. So on the one hand, this quotient is projective. But we saw that this group I is compact at infinity, so it's reductive. So this quotient is also affine. And because I know this is connected, there has to be a point, so the two groups are equal. Okay, so that's Tate's theorem. And so if you go through this and you add kind of Hodge cycles, the basic structure of the thing still works. But you might have noticed that I was cheating slightly, because at various points I used independence of L, right? And I already stressed that I don't know independence of L in this case. I mean, I don't know that the conjugacy class is independent. But if you go through, you can still extract something from the argument. Namely, you can still at least find one L so that you can still make the argument work for one L. So the sum L so that the argument works, and in particular, you get out of this group I at least has the same rank as G. Okay, but if it works for one L, then this identifies for you the group I over QL with the centralizer of the Frobenius gamma L and G. Okay, so in particular, you get that this group has the right rank. And from that, you can then that's kind of a partial result. But using that, you can then construct enough special points. So you can show that every isogeny class contains a special lifting. So I'll come back to that. Once you have that every isogeny class contains a special lifting, then from that it's easy to see that that the gamma L's are then stably conjugate, because you can kind of assume your thing is a reduction of a special point and use reciprocity. Okay. So let me come back to this theorem that every isogeny class contains a point which admits a special lifting. So here's the idea. So remember, at this point, we just know that the group I has the right rank. Okay. So we have a point X in our Shimura variety, and I want to move it in an isogeny class and construct a special lifting. Okay. So I'm going to use the fact that the group I has the right rank. So what I do is I choose a sum-maximal torus in this group I. And then, so I'm working over the bit vectors of the field of definition of my X. It's an FQ value point, and I have the fraction field, which is K0. And so over K0, well, T is embedded in I. Over K0, I can embed I in G just by looking at crystalline homology. So I can think of T as a subgroup of G. And then you can check that this is where you need that the group T is big enough. Then you can check that, so we have this co-character mu of G coming from our Shimura datum. And what you can check is that you can choose a co-character of T, which is defined over some extension, which is conjugate to, which has two properties. One, it's conjugate to mu. And the second thing is, if I use this co-character, so if I have a co-character of T, right, then I have this inclusion, and so I can use it to, I mean, I can think of it now as a co-character of GL of this K0 vector space, and so I can use the co-character to equip this module with Frobenius with a filtration, and the statement is that guy is then a weakly admissible module. Right? So that requires a proof, but that's basically where you use this fact that you've proven something that about the rank of I. For that, you need to know that T is also a maximal torus in G. Okay, but now I'm going to start to make the point. So DT is a weakly admissible module, but its Hodge numbers, just because mu T is conjugate to mu, are going to be of the kind that the module looks like it comes from a p-divisible group, and the result of Breuer tells you when you have such a thing, it really comes from a p-divisible group over AK. Okay. So now I want to look at the reduction of this guy, and after a little bit of massaging, one can arrange that if I take the reduction of this fellow, I'm indicating that with a bar, then it's isogenous to the guy that I started with, my p-divisible group over my mod p point x. It's isogenous in the sense that isogeny classes for g, namely I multiply by an element of this xp phi. Okay. right? So for that one, by massaging, I mean that, right, this is just a weak readiness of module, so if I have one p-divisible group in here, I have lots of choices. Okay? And then what's the argument? So since this is isogenous to this g of x, in the sense, then because we already solved the first problem, we know what the isogeny classes look like, we know that this reduction corresponds to the mod p point on the Shamir variety. And then, because we have a good deformation theoretic description of the formal neighborhoods of points, you can arrange that this GT, which is a lifting of this GT bar, also comes from a point here. Okay. So we've arranged that there's a point on my Shamir variety, and this GT comes from a lifting. And now I claim that this lifting, this x prime tilde, is the special point that you want. Okay? And the reason for that is the way we set things up, we have this torus T in the automorphisms of our abelian variety. Okay? And I mean, the x prime is isogenous to x. So if I think of this as right, I'm always, when I speak about automorphisms, I always mean up to Q isogeny, so these are the same. And on the other hand, I have this lifting, x prime tilde, right? And T, you see T, the co-character giving the filtration on the weak readiness of a module was T valued. So that means T respects the filtration, it commutes with the co-character, which means that the action of T on this guy lifts over here. And, by construction, if I look at this point of the Shamir variety, T will fix these Hodge tensors, so it can be viewed as a subgroup of G. So now if I think about the Mumford-Tate group of this guy, what does it mean it's a special point? It means the Mumford-Tate group is abelian, right? But it has to commute with all the Mumford-Tate group commutes with all the automorphisms of this abelian variety, and it's contained in G, right? So it has to be in the centralizer of T and G, but T is a maximal torus in G. And so I see that the Mumford-Tate group is actually contained in T. So I have to get that this guy is special.
Is this somehow very similar to some way to the group of chronic elliptic theory?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so it's a little different to the usual proof on season Honda-Tate theory, where you kind of so somehow here we didn't, in usual Honda-Tate theory, you just kind of first make a CM abelian variety and then use Tate's theorem to show that it's somehow isogenous. Here we didn't quite make it, I mean, eventually we made it, but we made something first in characteristic zero, we showed it had enough automorphisms, and then we tried to lift the automorphisms, as you say, by kind of getting them to respect the filtration. Okay, oops, I'm going to be really early. No one will object. So that's the kind of sketch in the case of Hodge type. And now we saw in the case of abelian type, that's in the case where it's a quotient of something of Hodge type, that the Shamir varieties. Oops, here we go. I'll go down here. I should have given just the formula. So we saw that in the case of abelian type, the integral models are made by, in some sense, taking quotient of the ones of Hodge type. There was some kind of formalism that used the action of the adjoint group. Okay, so what one has to do here, which you can do, is show that if you take this disjoint union, you can actually equip it with all the structures that you use to make those quotients. Okay, so in particular, there's an action of the adjoint group here. You can define a notion of connected component. And then you kind of prove a formula which is completely analogous. So if you have a Shamir datum G2X2 and you have a quotient, essential isogeny on the derived groups, which induces an isomorphism on the adjoint Shamir datum, then you get a formula like this. And it's not, the details here are not important. The point is just that the point is here that this is exactly the same formula we had, when we were dealing with Shamir varieties, if you replace S here by the corresponding Shamir varieties, then you get the same formula. And I'll just make kind of, I guess, one remark to finish, which is that when you're working in the case of Hodge type, so I kind of didn't even exactly tell you what the phi was, and I just replaced it with its Kottwitz triple. And so in that setting, if you're trying to prove the conjecture, there's not much difference between working with this triple and the phi. I mean, in the sense, you prove some result about the triple, and there's an easy correspondence between the phi and the triple. Okay? But when you're trying to define these extra structures on the set, it really seems, I mean, at the very least, extremely useful to have this formalism of the phis. So I guess all I want to say is this formalism with the phis really comes into its own when you want to prove this kind of statement here. I mean, if you just had these triples, I think you wouldn't. It would be hard to say, to describe the action of the adjunct group. Well, that's a kind of philosophical argument. I mean, the point is this kind of statement here, where you give the set all these different structures, that's purely, all these statements are in some sense purely group theoretic, right? So then you can interpret them, you know, as you like. I mean, in some general sense, of course, you're right, because if you're trying to describe the action, I mean, if I already told you lose some information by passing through these triples, then it's not so surprising. Like, if I want to describe, say, the action of the adjoint group, I need to know exactly what point I have and not up to something. Okay, so I'll stop there. Yeah, but the thing is, in the Ziegle case, it turns out that the sets which Kottwitz constructs have just one element. So I think there's no problem there. Yeah. I don't know of any way to. I mean, I don't know of any way. So the thing is, I said that even in this, you can make this bijection, but you have the same problem that you have to make a choice. Okay? And there's a kind of concrete question which you can ask. I mean, if you want to solve this problem, because we know that every point, so we know that in every isogeny class, there's a point with a special lifting, right? But in general, there could be many such points. Okay? Now, if you have a point with a special lifting, then you know that you can construct from that point a particular morphism. So if you have a point with a special lifting, then you can really, if you give yourself a special lifting, then you can really construct a particular morphism. Okay. So now what you have to basically show is that if you have in your isogeny class two points with two different special liftings, that this gives rise to the same morphism. And that, I mean, that I don't know how to do. So it's this kind of last delicate point. You mean down here?
Yes, before.
Yeah, well, these are the things which appear in Kottwitz's formula.
In Kottwitz, of course, there is a delicate relation between the three elements.
That's right. So I said, I mean, when I listed the elements, I told you roughly what kind of animals they were,
okay.
But I also said they have to satisfy some properties.
And they show here.
The properties, whatever they are, correspond to. I also didn't tell you what conditions the phi satisfies. Right, so I mean, that's right. You have to only work with the right phis. I thought someone might ask me about non-simply connected derived groups. But. Sorry, what's that? I'm not assuming this. So the Well, I'll only answer the question if you really want. I mean, this is more of a historical interest. It's a mathematical interest, but so I said the fee should satisfy some conditions, and the very so in the original paper of Langland Rappaport, there are kind of well, actually, there's maybe a long list of conditions, but the simplest condition that they have is if you have P mapping to G, then well, you can compose with the maps of the abelianization. Okay, and the condition is that this map here should, in some sense, be conjugate to a map which you construct directly, just using your co-character mu, which you got. Okay, and it was already observed in the original paper that with this formulation, the conjecture couldn't be correct unless the derived group was simply connected for some kind of reason. And so here I'm not assuming that, and the reason is it's easy to modify the conjecture so that it's okay when the derived group is not simply connected, and it's easy because you only have to modify this first condition, which is the kind of the easiest one, and the way that you modify it is instead of looking at the abelianization, you look at so we have the derived group in G, and let me consider it, it's simply connected cover G tilde, okay? And so what you do is you look, instead of the abelianization, you look at G modulo the stack, G modulo G tilde. Now, you can use the mu to construct a map here, and so you have this condition. Now, this may seem a little bit abstract, but it's actually very natural because the idea is that this mu should, whatever morphisms you have, the mu should give you some data, involving the abelianization. And if you somehow forget about the fact that you have a groupoid here and just look at work over Q bar, then it kind of corresponds to the following thing. I mean, the mu was a conjugacy class of co-characters, right? And of course, if you have a conjugacy class of co-characters, then you naturally get a co-character in the abelianization. But you get a little bit more than that, actually, right? You naturally get an element in pi 1 of G. This is abelian, so G acts when it acts by conjugation, acts trivially on this. And you can make precise, in some sense, if you look at the co-characters of the stack, this is pi 1 of G. So it's natural to kind of formulate a condition with this guy, because this is exactly the kind of the maximum kind of abelianized information that a conjugacy class of co-characters gives you. So it just involves replacing it, just like that. I can't think of any others because down the talk very clear. What is independent? You mean the groups? You mean like here? Is that? Yes, I think that's right. Yes, I think this reduction doesn't use anything about. The question to that is, if I want to give a precise answer, is a little bit complicated. So the literal answer is no, but it's the more precise answer is almost yes, in the following sense that the original conjecture only involved a description of the points of G with the Adele's trivial P component and Frobenius, right? But if I want to do this, I also need a description of the action of the adjoint group. So the answer to your question is yes, if you enhance this set, which is describing it, with the necessary extra structures, the points of the mod P points of the Shimura-Biedy have those extra structures too, right? And so if you enhance the conjecture so that the bijection respects those structures, then the answer is yes. Thank you.